Hey mamas, it's Megan here from the VBAC Link. You know how finding the right VBAC supportive provider can truly make all the difference. Well, finding the right diaper is sometimes just as tough. When searching for a supportive provider, check out our supportive provider list linked in the show notes. And when searching for quality diapers made with clean ingredients, reach out to Coterie. Their diapers are ultra absorbent, they can help minimize leaks and diaper rash, and are made with clean, hypoallergenic materials. It's one less thing to stress about. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout to get 20% off your order of $40 or more. You can find them by checking out the link in the show notes or going to coterie.com. That's C-O-T-E-R-I-E.com.
Hello, women of strength. I hope you guys are having a fantastic day or evening and excited for another episode of the VBAC Link. We have our friend Molly today, and she is from Central Alabama. And then we also have a co-host today, and she's one of our doulas. Her name is Allison. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Molly.
As we would say, Hi. And hello, Molly.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, you guys, and thank you for joining us. Allison is actually one of our doulas. I don't know if you've kind of noticed along the way, we here and there have one of our doulas on as a co-host. I think it's so fun to kind of hear an educational topic from them and then, of course, share where they are at, because I truly believe hiring a doula is so impactful. In fact, on Molly's form, that is one of the tips that she gave, right, Molly? You're like, hire a doula.
Yes, absolutely. And all the difference this birth.
Yes, doulas are incredible. So if you can, hire a doula. Before we get into Molly's story, Allison, I wanted to just kind of turn the time over to you really quick and have you share a little bit more of where you are at. So for the listeners, maybe in your area, they can come find you.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, you have a treat because I serve everyone all over the world. Globally, all of my work is online. My business name is the Cesarean Doula because I actually support women and birthing people emotionally after having emotionally difficult or traumatic cesarean births. Mm-hmm. And I do all of my work primarily over the internet, over Zoom. So my focus is actually not on birth, but on postpartum and on recovering from the feelings of grief, sadness, loss, overwhelm, confusion that we often have after a cesarean that's undesired or that goes in a difficult direction. And I had one of those. So that's what brings me to this work.
Yes. I love that you mentioned that. You're like, this is what brings me here. And I think in a lot of ways for doulas, that's what brings us to doing this work is our own experience and wanting to set a different pace and make change. So I love what you're doing, and we're recording in 2024, everybody, but hopefully now it's 2025 and you can go to our website because we're hoping to have a different option for searching doulas where you can actually go and search for online only, because we do have a big chunk of doulas that do virtual support. So let's hope that that is the thing. If not, email me and say, Megan, get on it. Do this because I want this option. Okay. Well, Miss Molly, welcome to the show, you guys. Molly is a full-time mama, a part-time vet technician, and a soccer coach. That is a lot of things all at the same time. Yes, my husband is a soccer coach, and just that alone is a lot. She, like I said, she lives in Alabama with her husband and her two sons, her mom, and lots of dogs, cats, and horses. She said that she also has two daughters in heaven. I'm sure you're maybe going to talk about that a little bit today, Molly.
Yes, it is part of our story.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you guys again for being here. In just one moment, we're going to dive in.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, Miss Molly. I don't know why I keep calling you that, Miss Molly, like you're a teacher. But it just comes.
It's the song, it'll get you.
It comes together. Yeah. Seriously. Okay. Thank you so much for being here. And yeah, I would love to turn the time over to you to share all of these stories.
Thank you very much. So if you guys, if you've been listening to the VBAC Link, I was on a couple of years ago talking about my first C-section and then the subsequent VBAC with my first daughter. Unfortunately, a couple of years after that, my daughter passed away. And shortly after that, the desire for to have another baby was laid on our hearts. And so we decided to try that for various reasons. That meant we had to go through IVF. We were very lucky in that our IVF journey was short, and that's a whole other podcast on its own, the IVF process. We ended up with three embryos, and then in December of 23, we did our first transfer. That one unfortunately failed, and so that's my second daughter in heaven. We did another sort of test after that to see why the transfer had failed and determined that we needed another day of shots. Well, I say we, me. I need another day of shots to do the transfer. So in March, we did another transfer with the extra day of shots, and that one was successful. I had like the teeniest bit of spotting the next day and just woke up knowing I was pregnant. It was pretty magical, actually. The at-home pregnancy test 7 days after that was positive. Then the blood test after that were positive. I did have a little bit of spotting after that, which was a little scary. And I talked to my doctor, and she upped the progesterone and oil shots I was taking, the amount of those that seemed to clear up the spotting. And then we went in for our first ultrasound. I was diagnosed with a subchorionic hematoma, I think is what it's called, which is essentially sort of like a bruise between the placenta and the uterine lining. Mm-hmm. And that sort of cleared up on its own, fortunately. And after that, I was a, quote, normal pregnancy. We weaned off the IVF shots. My last one was actually on Mother's Day, which was sort of a magical little sign. And that's when we sort of dove right into labor prep. We did the spinning babies and bouncing on the birth ball. I walked every day. We went back through our birth plan. We tried to cover every single contingency from a repeat cesarean, which wasn't the goal, but we wanted to be prepared just in case. We prepared to labor at home as long as humanly possible. We were prepared to have a car baby. We had like a bag with a bowl to catch the placenta and towels and puppy pads, and just in case we labored at home so long that we had a car baby. We hired a doula this time around. We had originally played around with the idea of doing a home birth, but in Alabama for VBACs, midwives still cannot attend VBACs at home in Alabama. We did find a midwife that was willing to do that for us, but because of the restrictions, it wasn't covered by insurance, and that sort of priced it out. So the compromise was that we would do a hospital birth, but I could have a doula this time. We interviewed doulas and found one who's actually certified by the VBAC Link. She's taken y'all's class, and she was wonderful. Her name's Jolanda, and she was fantastic. And actually, in the end, my husband said, I'm so glad we had a doula for me, not necessarily for me, but for him. He needed her more than I did. And that was pretty cool. We also, this time, instead of going with an OB, we went with midwives. They were associated with an OB practice, but we went just to the midwives. And that was an interesting and much different experience. It was more like a conversation and less like an exam. You know, we go in and they would take my blood pressure and then we would just talk. And it was wonderful. She went through my birth plan point by point and then signed it and scanned it into my chart. Anything that wasn't possible, she'd say, well, we can't do this because of the hospital we were at, but we can do this, or we can try and do this and make that work. And she was completely accepting of anything that I wanted to do differently. You know, we decided not to do the erythromycin eye ointment.
Erythromycin.
And she said, yes, thank you. She was fine with that. We delayed, I think, the vitamin K shot then, and the delayed cord clamping. She was all 100% supportive of everything that we wanted to do. I did have to see the OB once just so they could sign off on me being a, quote, healthy pregnancy. And that was a quick in and out there was a doctor visit, and they said, okay, we'll see you back in a couple of weeks. And I said, no, I'm going to go back across the street to midwives. I'll see them in a couple of weeks. So that was all, my pregnancy really in itself was pretty normal. And then we got sort of closer and closer to my due date. Now, I was due on November 18th, and we sort of got closer. I stopped working as a veterinary technician on the end of October, right before Halloween. And we'd had our baby shower, and we were getting close to all the guest dates. Everybody had guessed your baby's going to come. And I would text them, oh, nope, you missed it. It wasn't today. And so we slowly passed all those days, and then we passed my due date. And we were doing everything, the tea and bouncing on the birth ball and the dates and the pineapple, walking the mile circuit, curve walk, because I knew the closer we got to 41 weeks and 42 weeks even, the more that there was going to be pressure for a repeat cesarean. Now, to my midwife's credit, she never mentioned a repeat cesarean. That was the very last thing that she ever talked to us about. We had talked about it in our birth plan, of course, but she, as we passed the due date, she didn't mention that as a course of action. As a joke, we sort of asked our son, how, when do you think mama will have the baby? Now that we're past our due date, when do you think mama will have the baby? And he said, I think she's going to wait until December. I said, buddy, please don't put that on me. So we'll let you know how that goes towards the
Yeah,
end.
that would be, I mean, that would be what, 2.5 more weeks? Three, yeah, 2.5 more weeks. Yeah.
It was a long time. And I said, buddy, please don't put that on me. That's a long more time. So then we made it through Thanksgiving. I consented to a cervical check at 39 weeks, and there was no action in the cervix. But you and I know that that can change in an instant, and it's not an indicator of anything.
Nope.
At 40 weeks, I consented to another check and to a sweep of the cervical membranes, and that made me feel kind of crampy, but really didn't do anything. And we sort of started talking about induction at that appointment. We talked about, starting with the Foley bowl, we're breaking the waters, or maybe Pitocin. We talked about those options and which ones I was most comfortable with. And so then after the 40-week appointment, they sent me in for a biophysical and non-stress test, and we passed those with flying colors. No problem. Baby was fine. I was fine. She just was very, very comfortable. Then at the 41-week appointment, we did another sweep, and this time I was dilated to a really sort of tight one. But again, that didn't really do anything. We made our next appointment for like 41 weeks and 3 days. And the ladies in the front office said, we hope we don't see you for that appointment. And I said, I hope you don't either, but we did see them for that appointment. So at 41 weeks and 3 days, we talked about the induction again. They did another sweep just in the hope that maybe it would start things. It didn't. So we talked about and scheduled the induction, and we'd agreed to start with the Foley and see how that went, and then maybe talk about breaking waters and maybe Pitocin, but Pitocin being sort of our last resort. We stopped for dinner. That was Wednesday evening. We stopped for dinner on the way in because I was like, we're gonna have a baby and I need my strength. I've got to eat before we go in. So we stopped for dinner and we got checked in. They got me strapped in with a wireless monitor, which was new this time and was so much better than the wired monitor because I could move. It was much better. And this is the start of what we like to jokingly call birthatory, because it's birth purgatory. I was stuck there in the room, couldn't leave. My husband left just to get us food, but it just felt like we were there forever with nothing to do. And time sort of moved strangely as well. I watched Friends at night to help me sleep, and I watched Parks and Rec during the day to keep me entertained. We did a lot of walking up and down the room as much as we could. And that Wednesday evening was just sort of to start us monitoring. Jelana came in and she was sort of in and out and checking with us. That night, they also started me on the Group B strep meds. I think I forgot to mention I was positive this pregnancy. I had a weird reaction to whatever med they put me on first. Like my scalp was on fire. It was a really bad reaction. It
Interesting.
was,
Is
I
that
can't
like a
remember.
common reaction?
I believe they said it could happen, but it's not super common. And I wish I could remember which medicine it was they gave me. But I mean, it felt like my scalp was on fire. I was itching. It was horrible. So they gave me some Benadryl, which fortunately helped me nap, so I got some rest. But we didn't want to do too much of that, so they switched me to a different medication. And again, I wish I could remember the name of it, but I can't. And that I did not react to, so we stayed with that one for the rounds of the Group B strep meds. So that was Wednesday night, and they were really just monitoring me. Thursday morning, the OB and the midwife on call came in to discuss my case. They discussed options, Pitocin, I consented to a check because we were going to start with a Foley, but I was at a three already. So that sort of put the Foley out of commission because the Foley will only work up to three. We talked about Pitocin versus artificial breaking of the membranes. The OB did do a little bit of pressuring, but we were sort of all prepared for it. He said, "Well, at this point, this many post-states, you're probably definitely going to have meconium." And behind his back, my sweet doula rolled her eyes, and it was what I needed, that support in that moment for the doctor to say, "Oh, well, there's definitely meconium." And my doula to be like, "No, there's probably not." So we asked for time to discuss between us and what to do. And Jolanda had these little cards from, oh shoot, they were little informational cards with different
Like
with facts about,
affirmations? Oh.
well, there was affirmation cards, but different like facts about induction from, oh, I'm blanking now.
Probably from
I can't remember, but they were little printed out laminated cards with different facts about different types of induction. And they were really helpful. It's evidence-based birth. That's what it was.
Oh,
It was all
yes.
evidence-based and backed up bodies and stuff. So we discussed what we wanted to do, and we agreed to breaking the waters Thursday morning. So the midwives came in and broke my waters, and there was no meconium. So that doctor can just go sit somewhere else. My waters are broken. I walked up and down the room, but nothing really happened. That night, there were some surges that we did sort of time, but they petered out and nothing really happened. So we woke up Friday morning, and that was December 1st. And I, with despair in my voice, looked over at my husband and I said, "It's December. We've made it to December." I felt like a balloon that was beyond needing to pop and was just discouraged and tired. And I was at the end of my rope, really, honestly. They came in and I agreed to another check. This was the first check that they'd done since they broke my waters. And so, if you're keeping count at home, my waters have now been broken for about 26 hours. And we happen to be watching an episode of Friends where the character Rachel is in labor and she's having trouble dilating as well. And Ross makes a joke about, "I'm dilated three." Well, they did the cervical check and checked, and I was still dilated three. And Michael goes, "I'm dilated three." And everybody laughed. It was a good break in the tension. After that, they left to sort of go discuss my case. Michael went to go get me some hot water so I could make tea. And he came back in and he said, "Guess who's here? I'm looking at your chart." And I had no idea. And he said, "It's Vicky, who's the midwife who helped deliver my first VBAC baby." And she had retired but come out of retirement and was only working on the weekends in the hospital. And I looked at him, I said, "We're having a baby today." Just something told me that with Miss Vicky there with us, we were in good hands and we were going to be okay.
So earlier we talked about how Coterie diapers are incredibly absorbent and minimize leaks. But let me tell you a little bit about their comfort. These diapers are made with ultra soft apparel grade materials that can help keep your baby comfortable all day and night. You will feel the difference. Well, your baby will also feel the difference. Plus, the hypoallergenic and free of fragrance dyes and other irritants keep them safe for even the most sensitive skin. Pair that with their seamless subscription service when you can adjust orders via text, and you have the diapering solution that can truly make your life easier. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout and save 20% off your first order of $40 or more and experience what we're raving about.
So she came in and talked to me about starting Pitocin. She also told me, because at this point I was worried about a repeat cesarean, and she told me, she said, "I'm no longer looking at you as a VBAC patient. You've had a successful vaginal birth. I'm treating you just like any other birth now." And it was such a healing statement for me, and it wiped the worry about a repeat cesarean out of my mind. It was just the perfect thing to say.
I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I love that you pointed that out because most providers, they're actually looking at no matter what, you've had a VBAC or not, you're always a VBAC. But what you just said to me, it really is going to connect with so many others, and it connected with me because we just want to be viewed as someone going in and having a baby. We don't want labels and these things that loom over our head, even if we've had a VBAC before, Right? Like, or if we haven't had a VBAC before, like, we just want to be looked at and treated as someone coming in and having a vaginal birth, just like anybody else coming in and having a vaginal birth. So I love that you pointed that out. And I'm sure that that really did just connect and feel so good.
It was a huge release of stress knowing that I didn't have to worry about the repeat C-section, the VBAC anymore, and I could just focus on having the baby and what I was doing and just doing what we needed to do that day to have the baby. So we did agree to the Pitocin. She suggested, and we got very into the details, and we're almost a year out. I should have written them down sooner, but I can't remember the numbers we started at, but she wanted to start at a certain amount over a certain time, and I disagreed and I said, let's start lower and slower. And she said, that's fine. I'll do whatever you want to do. So we started really low and really slow. And I was starting to feel some things, but still not very much. It wasn't anything I had to stop to get through. It was really more just like a tightening. Jelana came to hang out with us, brought us more food and water. And she brought a puzzle to help distract us because we were going crazy being stuck in that room. Vicky came in later that afternoon, and because still no progress was really being made, they didn't check me, but they could just tell from the contractions on the monitor. She talked about wanting to up the Pitocin a little bit faster and more frequently. And I told her that I was worried about the difference in the Pitocin contractions versus, quote, natural contractions, because I had heard and read so much that the Pitocin contractions are much more intense. And she told me that she'd given birth with and without Pitocin, and the only difference for her was that the Pitocin births were faster. So I agreed for her to bump it up a little bit more, a little bit faster. That a little after a little bit of time to talk about it, we agreed to do that. They did check me after at that point, and I had worked my way up to a five, and baby had moved from a negative one to, I believe, a plus one. So we dilating some, and baby had descended a little bit. At that point, the contractions did start to pick up. I lost interest in the puzzle. We turned a movie on for me to watch. They were a little bit more intense, but still easy, and I could still sort of talk through them and walk through them. Jolanda did an excellent job. She reminded me to go to the bathroom. And so I went to the bathroom, and when I walked out, I felt the baby drop. I don't know any other way to explain it, but I felt her drop in the birth canal. It's like she was sitting high, and then suddenly she dropped. And I said that. I said, oh, I felt the baby drop. And my sweet doula said, you felt the baby drop? And I couldn't respond to her because then a contraction hit so hard that I could not talk through it. So at that point, I told them, I said, please turn the movie off because I couldn't handle the sound of the movie. My husband turned on music in the background, real low, of our birth playlist. I needed to get down on all fours. So I got down on my knees and I was sort of bent over a birth ball, sort of swaying back and forth and moving forward and backwards. Sort of swaying my hips and vocalizing through them, keep your mouth loose and low moaning through them. At some point, I didn't need the ball anymore, and Jolanda brought in this inflatable thing that was sort of U-shaped, and it was inflatable, but you could sort of be in it and lean over it. And again, I wish I remember the name of it, but it's wonderful because you could inflate it and then deflate it to move it and get it out of there. But it was just perfectly shaped for me to be able to lean over it and even sit on it if I needed to, but I just was leaning over it. The contractions were getting more difficult, and she reminded me to relax my hands because my hands had gotten really tight. And so she was reminding me to breathe and relax my hands. She also suggested counter pressure on my tailbone. I did not want it on my hips, but she tried it on my tailbone, and that felt incredible. Suddenly, the contractions were so much easier to bear, and they just felt more productive. It was fantastic. So she and my husband Michael took turns wearing their arms out, pushing my tailbones through the surges. At that point, then the wireless monitor got kind of weird because it had been on me for so long. The stickers, I guess, had just giving out. So a poor nurse was on her knees underneath me, holding the monitor on my belly, and there was either Jolanda or Michael behind me pushing on my tailbone through the contractions. And then I started sort of grunting and felt kind of pushy. Jolanda recognized my grunting because we'd talked about during my consult during my first VBAC, I get kind of grunty when I'm pushing. And she recognized the sound. And she said, are you pushing? But I didn't want to answer her because I didn't want to stop pushing because it felt so good to push. And I hadn't been checked, so I didn't want them to know that I was pushing and check me and tell me that I couldn't push. And also at this point, I was practically sitting back against the counter pressure. The surge would hit, and I would sit back into whoever was doing counter pressure and practically put my full weight back on my tailbone, on their hand, and the counter pressure. Then my knee sort of got tired being on the floor, so I asked to move to the bed, and they asked to check me. They said, the midwife, Miss Vicky, said, I would love to check you right now. And I said, as long as I can be on my hands and knees, you can check me however you want. And so I got up on my hands and knees on the bed, leaned over, and they checked me, and I was good to push. So at that point, we started sort of actively pushing, not just me pushing because it felt good, but pushing because we knew we were pushing a baby out. And pushing, it felt so good to push. I needed to push. It felt so good. And I could feel her moving through the birth canal. I could feel her head coming down. And it was amazing. And it just like with my first birth, it's frustrating to feel the baby move and then go back, and then move forward and then go back. But you can tell you're making progress. And I don't know how long I pushed for because I was way off, who knows where, and nobody else looked at the clock. Michael would have, but he was getting ready to catch. He had prepped to catch this baby. So I pushed her out into her papa's hands, and our
Oh, I
baby
love
Nora
that.
was here. Yes, it was, he had prepped. He watched all kinds of videos meant for midwives, and he was so ready, and he did such a great job. Baby Nora was there, and she was perfectly healthy. She was 7 pounds and 2 ounces and 19 inches. So not even, for being 41 weeks and 5 days, she was still just, perfectly cooked. I passed the placenta at some point after that. We did the golden hour and we snuggled, and he cut the cord after it stopped pulsing, and that was all very much a blur to me, just a sort of golden, snuggly haze of love. So we passed the placenta and it was declared complete, and we looked at it and we put it in our little cooler to take home and freeze to plant her little birth tree. I did tear a little bit, so they stitched me up and we took some pictures. And then Miss Vicky went home. She'd stayed 45 minutes late for us. She went home at that point, and I started nursing Nora. At that point, however, I was still in pain. So they said, would you like something for the pain? And I asked for just Tylenol. I didn't want anything heavier than that. But I was still pushing. I was still feeling the urge to push, and it was getting worse. So the nurses applied some pressure to my uterus on the external pressure, and it hurt so bad I could barely stand it. Michael took the baby at that point. And Jelana suggested me trying to void my bladder, and maybe that would help. But I couldn't get those muscles to work. So they put a catheter in, and that didn't really help. The surges were still sort of coming, and I couldn't stop pushing. And so they put more pressure on my uterus, external pressure, and I passed a huge blood clot. It was like softball-sized blood clot, and that felt a little better. But I was still pushing, and I couldn't. Could not stop the pushing. So they gave me some stronger pain meds and talked to the OB who was on call, and all agreed that I needed to go to the OR and see if something had been left. So we agreed to that and went under sedation into the OR, and they removed a golf ball size portion of placenta, which, yeah, it was confusing because they had declared my placenta complete. And after talking about it, and they looked at all the pieces, and it turned out that I had like a lobular,
Lobe.
I think.
I was gonna say you
Yes,
probably had a lobe.
yes. And so after I mentioned, oh, well, I had some spotting early in pregnancy, they figured that the spotting had sort of contributed to that, and that's why the placenta looked complete, and there was a lobe, and the hematoma sort of all contributed to the early bleeding in the lobe and the placenta. Came out of the OR fine. I got 2 bags of blood, but felt fine when I woke up. I got to hold Nora in the OR, well, not in the OR, but in the recovery, and nurse her again, and everything was really fine after that. Jelana checked on us a couple hours after that. She brought us food. We had talked about what I wanted to eat post-birth, and I wanted to eat a cheeseburger with bacon from the specific place near the hospital with the fries, and she brought it all, and we ate it at like 11 p.m. It was wonderful. And Michael, like I said before, said later that having a doula this time around was 100% worth it, mostly for him, because she was suggesting things that he wouldn't have known to offer, like the counter pressure and, hey, maybe she needs to pee and things like that. It saved him and helped him know what to do while I was off in labor land. That our sweet doula was so worth it. And after that, recovery was great and we were fine.
That is awesome. So, still had a little bit of a hiccup there in the end, but overall, really great experience.
It was awesome. And I said before, the birth plan, we tried to plan for all contingencies, but the one thing we did not plan for was 3 days in trying to be induced. naturally. And it was, I mean, they say time isn't linear, and I have never felt that more true than we were stuck in that room for 3 days. It was very weird, just not being able to get out. And it's not something I would do again, the induction part, but we made it through thanks to great support from midwives and doula and my wonderful husband. And I would do the birth party, and maybe not the hemorrhaging at the end, but the birth part I would do again.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's just less ideal. And I don't know, did they ever talk to you? Because I know that IVF parents do have a slightly increased chance of hemorrhaging. Did they ever relate it to IVF, or was it mainly just, hey, you had a subchorionic hematoma earlier, then you have this low? Maybe it was just that.
The doctors didn't. Now, we were very aware that she was an IVF baby, and we had done a lot of research before that IVF babies have a very, quote, sticky placenta. And that was one of the one of the factors that we didn't do a home birth was because if the placenta sticks and then you're at home, it can be a rush to the hospital. But the doctors at the hospital didn't mention the IVF possibility as the reason I hemorrhaged. Maybe it played a part. I don't know. They sort of seemed to put it on the subchorionic hematoma, but it could have been both. I don't know.
All little factors could have been. The best thing is that, it seemed pretty minor and a quick fix, a quick fix. And I just wanted to remind everybody. So I'm pretty sure this is your episode. It's episode 84. So if you want to go here, the breech cesarean and the burst VBAC, definitely go back and listen to those on episode 84. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'm so glad that it was so great and that your husband got to catch a baby. That's like my favorite, you guys. Just to let you know, that's happening more and more. At least it has been here in Utah as we're attending birth. So sometimes all you gotta do is ask. So if you have a partner that is interested in that, I think asking is not harmful, right? Just ask. And it can kind of seem intimidating, but it's not too bad. It's not too bad. They really help these partners catch these babies. Allison, I would love to have you share your two cents and your educational topic on healing after cesarean. We're doing these topics instead of reviews sometimes when we have guests, and I love what you do because just like Molly and myself, we've been there of having an unexpected, well, maybe with the breech, maybe it was kind of planned. I'm trying to remember back in your story.
So with the breech, with the cesarean, we had planned a C-section, but then he broke my water early, so it was sort of a not necessarily
Not,
emergency cesarean, but we had to go in before we were, quote, scheduled to for the C-section.
yeah, it was planned but unexpected at the time. The wrong timing, yes. Okay, well, tell us more of Allison.
And I want to say thank you so much, Molly, for sharing your story. And I actually want to kind of point out a few things that I think are really important here. I work with so many people who have had a birth that feels difficult or traumatic. And oftentimes there are women who come to me who say, I don't understand why I feel upset about my birth, even though I have this baby who's healthy and alive, if we're lucky enough to have a living baby or a healthy baby or both. And one of the things I talk a lot about is that oftentimes it's not the events themselves in the birth that create a difficult or traumatic birth, but it's how we feel, right? And so, like, what makes a birth feel good or bad? Like, I listened to you talk about this experience where you had this, some challenges leading up to it, right? Especially preconception and then during conception. And I felt your joy. I felt your connectedness and I felt your power throughout your story, even as you talked about the really difficult part at the end with, the placenta needing to be retrieved. And I want to just point out that that's what I heard, and you've got to tell me if this feels right for you, Molly. But what I heard was like many moments where you talked about feeling connected. You talked about your sweet doula. You talked about the surprise midwife coming in to support you. You felt connected. You felt seen, like that moment where you said, oh, well, the monitor wasn't working, but then the nurse got underneath me, you know? So instead of actually you accommodating the hospital's protocol and policy, like, I love this idea of, I'm imagining like a nurse laying on her back, like under you as you're on all fours. You know, you're empowered. Like, that's truly centering you, right? You're, you know, in control in a lot of these moments. You said you wanted the Pitocin lower. The doctor or the midwife honored that. It sounds like you were informed. You used some examples of the cards from evidence-based birth and a lot of the, you know, information you've engaged with prior to birthing. One of the things I talk about with my clients is like, maybe you even feel sexy during birth. You didn't mention that at all, but that might have been, there might have been moments, maybe not. Are there any other like emotions that come up for you? Did I leave anything out? That you're like, oh, I really felt another positive emotion.
No, you nailed it 100%. I felt very supported this birth from, the midwife listening to me and, like you said, honoring my requests and my husband being there and the doula. I felt very supportive. So even the end and the hemorrhaging, which should have been scary, I don't look back on as scary. I don't want to repeat it, but I wasn't scared in that moment because I felt taken care of and supported.
Right. And that's so, that is like so textbook. And I love this story because that's a really, really scary thing. And if you hadn't had that support, that attunement, that communication, and that safety, it could have felt different. It could have made your story feel like there was this turning point, right, into kind of like a dive, right? And I feel, and I love that your advice was like getting a doula because it, in your story, I really feel how your relationship and respect for her are a big component of your support and empowerment. So, you know, I just want to end by saying that birth is really about those emotions, right? Not the modality or the even the environment where we birth. And if we can create those experiences for ourselves as much as possible, we don't always have the ability to do that, right? Lots of things have to come together. But if we can focus on how do I make myself feel empowered, connected, sexy, seen, in control, informed during my birth, however I birth, then the likelihood of having a positive outcome emotionally is so much higher. And when we have a better emotional experience, we're more likely to be able to have a breastfeeding, a, you know, supported breastfeeding experience, and also go into motherhood feeling centered, feeling capable of taking on this new role or another baby when we already have littles at home. So thank you so much for sharing your story. I feel really touched, and I can imagine that others are too.
Thank you.
I do love that you pointed that out, Allison, and the way we feel during our labor, the way we're treated, the way we're communicated to, it really impacts that next step going into that motherhood era. And I too, like, I think back of your story and I remove your doula from your story and I remove your supportive provider. And that birth very much could have unfolded very differently, especially because it was a longer induction, right? And so when you put that powerhouse team with that true love and support back into the story, it's like, well, I don't understand why it wouldn't unfold that way anyway. Like, but really, if you look back, it without that, it's questionable sometimes. And so we talk about it, you guys. I think I will probably talk about it until I die. I mean, truly, like I will probably not even be in this work when I'm 80 years old, but I will still be educating people on hiring a supportive team and provider because it really does impact. I had an interview the other day with a first-time mom, and she was telling me who her provider was, and I very much remember this provider as a resident, and she was fine. But not great, right? She wasn't like my favorite. Like, I very much knew, oh, in the future, I would not suggest her as a provider. And so, as I was talking, and I didn't want to project my opinion on her, and I was talking to her, she said that her and her husband had actually been feeling a lot of pressure, and that when she goes into her visit, that she normally has a voice, but when she's there, her voice is muted.
She feels like she can't say these questions and can't communicate. And I think right there is that big red flag that if you cannot communicate with your provider in a prenatal appointment, then that is a big sign that you will not be able to communicate with your provider efficiently during labor, and they're not going to respect you. And so I love that your midwife came out of, you know, retirement and started working on the weekends because she probably loves this so much, and that you got her, and it worked out so well. But you know, guys, again, find a good supportive provider. And if you're feeling that, if you're feeling like my interview did the other day, don't hesitate, move, change, find that support, because you want to be like Bali, where you're in the situation and you feel that love and empowerment. And even though there was something that kind of went awry and not according to plan, Molly felt that support. And so, like Allison said, that could have been a very traumatic point in your labor where it wasn't ideal. You wouldn't do it again. You wouldn't choose it. You wouldn't suggest it. But even though it happened, and I don't want to like downplay it, like, oh, at least everyone's happy and healthy. You know, I don't want to do that. But like, it happened, and because you had that support, your overall view is different. So great tips, Allison. Beautiful story, Molly. Again, go back and listen to episode 84 for the rest of her stories. And once again, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.